This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Is Sky Blues Extra.
Hello and welcome to the Sky Blues Extra podcast, proudly sponsored by Dylan's Brewery and the Sky Blue Tavern. And my name is Ross Cooper, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Matt Trutwin. Matt, it's the first time in a while. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's been a little while. I'm all good. Obviously disappointing in the end this weekend with the scoreline, but yeah, all in all pretty good. How about yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Not too bad. You were saying just before we came on, kids' parties today, yeah, so you're exhausted.
The classic Sunday afternoon kind of activity for a dad, but yeah, it's not too bad. He just runs around and ties himself out, so can't be too bad.
There we go, exactly. And then jumping on to do this kind of extra podcast, I mean, what an evening. So of course, as always, Sky Blue Army, thank you for listening. Today on this episode, we're going to obviously review the Norwich City defeat, the 12-game unbeaten run for the Sky Blues coming to an unfortunate end away at Carrow Road. And then we'll also have a look ahead to Tuesday night's FA Cup fourth round replay at home to Sheffield Wednesday, as we finally see the back of that Sheffield club, hopefully for a couple of seasons, because they'll be going down. So we've played them enough this season. But Matt, let's get straight into it. Norwich, I mean, me and Dean spoke on the preview pod last week, and I actually went for a win because I wanted to be positive, but I did beforehand spend about 5 minutes justifying why I thought we might lose, purely because I don't know what it is. We seem to have a bad record there. And I mean, yeah, what's your overriding takeaway from the sort of result and performance as a whole before we dive into it?
Yeah, I mean, I was able to do a little piece with TalkSport 2 in the week, and they asked me a little bit looking forward to the Norwich game. And it's one of those, for me, I would have been happy taking a draw away from that game beforehand, more so with the fact of there's nothing to suggest to me that we can't beat a Norwich in this league for any particular reason. But it's not a place where we obviously have happy memories. So maybe there's a little bit of that which comes into our thinking as fans, but also they are one of the teams I think that will end up being in and around the battle with us when it comes to the playoffs. So going there and being able to take a point off them, for me, wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world. And obviously, we know we're dealing with a few injuries and not coming into it on the back of a great performance against Bristol City, even though we were able to get the late equaliser. I would have been happy with a point, to be honest with you. But yeah, I think like a lot of Cov fans would have said, we feel like we can go there and win. But at certain points, you're just going to have those days where maybe it doesn't go your way. I think overall performance, you know, it kind of fit into a bit of a routine that I'd expected. And I don't think the natural fit of the game also necessarily massively doesn't suit us, because I expected Norwich to maybe have more of the ball. I don't think that necessarily hurts us too much. We play quite well, pressing, winning the ball back, and then trying to hit with pace. So And obviously the first half, they probably had the better of it, but still majority of the half, I think we kept them at arm's length. Obviously, I know we'll get into the details a lot more going through the pod, but it felt like that normal routine with us. You know, we kept them at arm's length for a period of time, managed to grab the goal and had the opportunities maybe to go on and extend that lead, and probably would have seen what we've ended up seeing quite a few times over the last couple of seasons on away days. You know, Millwall, Sunderland, Middlesbrough, we've seen it this season where we've got that goal and been able to go on and you know, and kick on from there. So that obviously was a pivotal part of the game. And unfortunately, I guess when you talk about the fact of, as you say, that unbeaten run for us, you're going to have those weeks where maybe a little bit of the rubber, the green doesn't go your way with certain moments of the game. And obviously this weekend was one of those examples. So certainly not a doom and gloom loss for us. In my opinion, I think law of averages, you're going to lose certain games, and law of averages, you're going to have those moments go against you. And I think that's what happened to us on Saturday afternoon. Unfortunately, you know, it's obviously ended up seeing us go down to a defeat.
Yes. Very spot on. Agree with everything you said there, Matt. Let's, before we dive into the sort of the nuances of the game, the lineup, obviously coming off the back of that draw at home to Bristol City. Obviously we knew Ben Sheaford got injured in that game and was going to be obviously out for this game. What did you make of the lineup, makeup of the lineup? Obviously Ellis Sims getting a start after obviously coming on and scoring. You know, had you right on the left, Sakamoto. I mean, it looked a really attacking lineup, because I remember Dean last week had sort of, you know, thrown the idea out there that could Mark Robins see this fixture, because we've not been very good there, as like similar to like the Leeds away, you know, where he plays a lot of defenders. But
yeah,
it wasn't that. He went for it. And I think that's testament to show the belief that we've got. I mean, were you pretty buzzing with the team when you saw it?
Yeah, I was excited. I think the only one which was maybe not even surprising, but maybe a bit more of a question mark, maybe I thought we might have gone a different way, was the centre midfield partnership.
Yes.
I thought with the weight of what happened in the week and everything else, I expected Sims to start. I don't know about how you felt with that one, but I would have been surprised if he hadn't started. But centre midfield, I don't know. It's going to be a bit of trial and error for me in that part of the pitch now, because obviously we know following the game, we already had an idea it was going to be a certain period of time without Sheaf. I think there's going to be a trial and error to see what's our best combination in that stretch of time without Sheaf, because you know, we'd obviously had a little bit of a insight into Torp over a couple of games, but not fully seen exactly what he can do. But you're hoping he's the person who might step into the team. And then it's a question of, okay, who kind of, I guess, goes alongside him the best, who maybe fits him the best, because you hope he makes a starting position his own or has the opportunity over the coming weeks. So you might be looking in saying, okay, we need to lean into the areas where he gives us maybe even an advantage over Ben Sheaf. But what do you then need to do to account for that from a more defensive standpoint? So I was a little bit surprised, actually, that he started Jamie Allen. I don't know if you felt the same.
I agree. No, it was. Yeah, I thought it was a surprise. I think Torp starting is something that everyone sort of wanted to see after his sort of impressive, you know, league sort of debut against Bristol City. But yeah, when I saw Jamie Allen, and then as captain, he's clearly the next in line, isn't it? It goes like Sheaf, then if Godden's fit, he'll be captain. If he's not in, then it's Allen. I mean, you just wonder who it would go to if Allen wasn't playing. But yeah, I was a little surprised. But I guess, you know, like we sort of discussed before we came on, I've seen a lot on Twitter about, you know, our options in midfield, but yeah, I'd remind people that we've actually, bringing Torp in means we've got more options than we'd had at the start of the season. You know, Ben Sheaf got injured at the start of the season, as did Liam Kelly, and Heyman was sold, and we literally had Eccles and Allen for literally what felt like an eternity, and people were starting to panic that if that's the midfield we've got all the way up till January, we were going to be in trouble. But obviously, you know, people got back fit. We switched formation, allowing Latibodier to be an option there. And we brought in Victor Torp, who, you know, we'll get onto him, but, you know, he's looked very, very impressive. Suddenly, central midfield looks like, okay, there is still competition for places there. And maybe he felt like Jamie Allen's energy, you know, could sort of, you know, bring something. But I sort of expected to see Eccles with Torp, to be honest. But then having said that, Robins has been talking in the last couple of games about needing to take Eccles off in certain matches because of tiredness. So maybe it isn't a complete surprise. That being said, what did you make of the first half performance, Matt?
I mean, it didn't really surprise me, to be honest. They came out quite, I don't know, they kind of pushed us really early on, had a couple of opportunities.
Yes.
But I still felt for a majority of the half where they probably had more of the ball and maybe felt like they might be a little bit more threatening. I think a majority of the game actually was kind of at arm's length. And that's how it's felt during this run for me, even in those games where you're playing against a team who are, you know, on paper, you might say as good, if maybe not a bit better than us. They've still largely been kept at arm's length for a majority of the game or through spells where they've maybe had a little bit more of the ball and pushed on. So, and that's how I felt in the first half. Looking at the stats, I think, you know, they dominated when it comes to the overall number of stats, but they also dominated when it comes to shots from outside the area. So they weren't, in my opinion, kind of breaking us down with ease, getting into really clear-cut opportunities and looking really like the goal. It didn't feel like they were knocking on the door.
No, it didn't, in my opinion. No, it felt like there was a little, I think Robin sort of summed it up quite nicely. You know, the first half, they had a couple of, they got into some like half decent areas, you know, yeah, where you thought a final, another good pass or something could cause a problem, but that never seemed to happen. I mean, you know, you're saying them obviously, yeah, in possession and everything like that, you know, they had a, you know, a lot of, you know, dominate those sort of stats. But the key stat that jumps out at me is big chances created. This is over the whole game. Three for us, one for them. Big chances missed, two for us, zero for them. You know, and I think that ultimately, regardless of everything else in the game, that's the difference in the result, along with obviously the red card, which we'll come to. But it felt like watching the first half, I mean, it's the first time I've seen us go to Carrow Road and like for long periods, you know, they were letting us have the ball, do you know what I mean? And we had our centre backs on the halfway line and we were getting out wide and we looked composed. We just, it felt slightly pedestrian tempo wise.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that, and it felt like our front three were all just slightly off it. Do you agree? Just sort of ever so slightly, a bit, I don't know, wasn't quite as, we've seen some really sort of succinct performances, haven't we? Sort of from that front three, you know, and it just felt everything was just ever so slightly off in that first half.
Yeah, I mean, maybe two teams feeling each other out a little bit as well. But as you say, we were able to kind of move the ball around for periods of time quite comfortably. I think what stands out for me at the minute with us being so well drilled. So those opportunities where maybe they got into good positions, even maybe caught us out in one area, but we were so fast at getting back and getting cover. And it was a ball over where Thomas got caught on his heels a little bit, but Kitchen was straight over to kind of nullify the threat. I think one of those you mentioned about our centre halves kind of moving forward and coming into good positions. I think we got caught out with Kitchen in one of those situations. But Torque was able to drop back and kind of make a tackle where it looked like it was about
his reading of the game is very good. Like, I mean, that's what really impressed me, that he seems to have really adapted sort of incredibly quickly. You know, when you compare the fact that he hadn't played for 5 weeks just in general because of a winter break in his league, and you compare how long it took the likes of Van Avac and Haji Wright and Sakamoto to all settle in from the summer, you know, for him to come in and he looks like a leader. You know, he looks like he's sort of, you know, talking and vocal, and he reads the game ever so well, very calm. And I mean, he did probably the thing that sticks out in my mind from that first half was when he picked the ball up 25 yards out. And again, you know, it was an unbelievable effort. It dipped, just over the bar. And you think this guy's clearly got something about him, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's another threat. You know, we don't maybe take into stock having that ability to. He starts to make a bit of his name for himself of, you know, those kind of efforts, scoring those kind of goals as well, that teams are going to account for that, and it's going to open up opportunities in other areas
as well.
It's going to maybe change their mindset of how they can defend against us to an extent.
But if they push out to him suddenly, he might be able to, because he clearly can make a pass as well. He can then slip a little through ball into out, you know, inside to Sakamoto or O'Hare, and he can take up those little pockets. And yeah, I think it adds another string to our bow, doesn't it, in terms of, you know, threats.
Yeah, and he's going to be massively important. Obviously, we know with Sheaf being out now for a sustained period of time. So his ability to come in as a leader, somebody who can have an impact straight away. You know, we talk about the players in the summer maybe not being able to do so as quickly, but obviously they've got to do it amongst a bigger piece of new players coming in. So they're all kind of finding their feet at the same time. And that can be a bit more tricky. I think obviously he's coming into a team which has started to find its feet and establish itself, and he can add another, I guess, string to our bow. So yeah, we do look really, I guess, as an overall piece, we do look really well regimented, well drilled. You know, if somebody maybe gets caught out a little bit, or if we're pressing and they're able to pass in behind one or two players, it seems like people know what to do to react to those situations. And he's slotted in nicely, and he's going to be massive for us, obviously, over the next 6 to 8 weeks. But I think we might see a bit of trial and error. You know, we've obviously, we'll touch on Sheffield Wednesday a little bit later on. I'd expect Talk to play, but I think he might be alongside somebody else in centre midfield to see what combination works best from that perspective. But as an individual player, he looks another fantastic recruit for us.
He really does, doesn't he? He really does. And, you know, that was pretty much it for the first half. And I think we all sort of were hoping and expecting, you know, us to step it up a gear. We all felt like on our, you know, Sky Blues Extra chat, we were sort of, I think the consensus felt like we're in this here, and we hadn't created a gilt-edged chance yet. And we've been scoring goals this season, and particularly obviously in this unbeaten run. So that was something that I think gave us confidence, wasn't it? That actually we're going to get a chance, and we couldn't have asked to start the second half in a better way, could we, really? I mean, you know, a couple of minutes into the half, again, you know, Torp involved, O'Hare then doing... You know, that's what he brings, isn't it? Running into the box, being quite direct. They can't touch him, otherwise they risk giving away a penalty. And then he chops inside, and then it's a beautiful finish from him, isn't it? To kickstart the second half in, you know, meaning like we, you know, starting as we mean to go on.
Yeah, this goal, I think, encapsulated the two main areas where O'Hare seems to have come back and massively improved from the player he might have been, you know, pre-injury or even a couple of seasons ago. I remember talking on the pod a couple of years ago, and it was quite a recurring theme for us to be talking about opportunities that O'Hare missed, getting into good positions and missing those opportunities. And his composure in front of goal seems to be on a different
level. That's been a massive difference, isn't it? I used to call them the Callum O'Hare tickles, that he used to just tickle the ball into the goalkeeper's hands. He'd do all the hard work, and his finishing just... Like, he just would never connect with it, would he, properly? And it would just be, like, really soft. But I think you're bang on. I think the goals he scored, and you look at them, you go, he's clear. That's something that's massively improved. And to show that composure, to put it in the bottom right corner and give us the lead at that point was great. And what did you make of the celebration, Matt?
It was an enjoyment. I like the fact that Haji Wright was involved more than anything. So I feel like he almost seems... Kind of a shy guy. He's almost smiling in the background, but doesn't get as overly involved. So I don't know. He's probably a bit of a gamer or
driving a bus. I mean, if it was a bus, where's Max Biamu? He loves driving the bus. He'd be getting jealous, wouldn't he?
He is known to go to games. He might have been in the stands.
He might have been.
So yeah, it was a nice moment. I just touching back on Callum O'Hare. The other thing for me is his physicality overall as well. You know, his strength. He's not the player he was 2 years ago in terms of being maybe as easy to bump off the ball. And he was one of those players who probably referees had a little bit of a mindset of before a game of thinking, you know, this guy's going to go over and he's going to try and buy free kicks.
Sakamoto-esque is what you know, where...
Little bit, yeah. Yeah, and I think he's now got to the point where, even in the goal, he does get a little bump from behind and he doesn't go flying over or the dramatics or anything like that. He stays on his feet, he regains his composure. Brilliant little turn inside and a great finish. And yeah, I enjoyed the celebration.
And almost, you know, we had a quick free kick, good thinking by Jamie Allen, and then a ball played up the left channel a couple of minutes later, and had you right. Perfect position. That's where you want to see him. And he opened his legs, used his pace, running down the left, cut inside. He did everything right, didn't he? And then the finish, and even the finish, it wasn't at straight at the goalie. He's trying to go in that far right corner, similar, basically put it where O'Hare put it. And he's just not got it quite in the corner enough. And the goalie's made the save. And you look at that and felt like 2-0 there. And that's game, set and match, isn't it, at that point? Because, you know, listen, this is all I'll say about Norwich City is that they, and I know a few Norwich fans, they'll be the first to admit that their fan base is probably one of the least supportive in the league in terms of, like, they just turn on their players' backs. And I think at 2-0, I think that would have been game over, because we could have then just adjusted what we wanted to do. And it just felt like a big moment, didn't it? You know?
Yeah. It was, obviously, if I agree. I think if we score that goal, it's pretty much game over. You know, it's not a ground where you kind of think, yeah, they're going to get behind their team in those difficult situations. So the only thing I take from it overall, more than anything, is I compare what I saw from Haji Wright in that moment, even, or in that whole situation of how he created the opportunity versus what I think back, you know, 3 months or earlier on in the season. It's a completely different thing. I was thinking earlier on about the game, and the commentator described him as cumbersome, and I was like, that actually is pretty accurate. That's how he feels. It's almost a bit like he gets caught up in his feet, and you know he's got these great athletic, you know, gifts, I guess. He's a very quick guy. I'm sure he's got the power, and he's got the ability to go away from players and everything else, but he just didn't seem to have the confidence, or whatever it was, it wasn't quite clicking for him at that point. And you watch that situation in itself, and you think he's what, maybe about 10 yards in their half, way out on the touchline. He's got a defender nearby. He glides away from him, absolutely glides away from him at pace. You know, the defender's obviously running back with no ball. He's got to run away with the ball, and he's absolutely gone away from him. He takes it inside really quite nicely, and it's there for him, and he creates the opportunity. Fantastic. You know, if he obviously could kind of get a bit more whip and a bit more bend on the finish, then you'd be like, that's an absolutely outstanding goal. So the opportunity's there, and obviously, yeah, there was it's a disappointing finish, I guess, but as you say, it's not straight at the keeper. He's put it to the side. It's a decent save from the keeper. He could do better with the chance once he's there, but I think overall, you were also saying, you've got to take into account he's created that from
exactly.
Very little.
Exactly. I think that's... And even on Tuesday, when I thought he looked against Bristol City, I thought he looked visibly rusty. It was like,
yeah.
Even in that game, the one thing about Haji Wright is he gets chances, like no matter what. And even Bristol, when I thought, wow, he still had that header. Against Norwich, he had that shot in the first half, and then he had obviously the big chance we're talking about in the second half. Games don't pass him by without him being involved. Do you know what I mean? And him having the opportunity to affect games. I look at him and go, he keeps doing that, and he will get back to the form that he was showing before, and he'll end up on 14, 15 goals and probably like 8, 9, 10 assists. And we'll all look and go, actually, stats-wise, who can argue with that? That's what he's on course to do. And I think if he keeps getting those opportunities, you know, he already looked miles sharper on Saturday against Norwich than he did, you know, on Tuesday against Bristol. And I think that will just come with game time. And as you say, it was one of those. We were made to pay, though, in typical Coventry City fashion, though. Norwich made a double change, bringing on Ashley Barnes and Onel Hernandez. And Barnes was involved. I don't know, a long ball out, crossing, didn't deal with it first initially. Barnes had a shot, bounced back, and Sargent sort of volleyed it in from close range. Nothing too much that Collins could do. It just felt a bit poor, though, didn't it, all in all, that goal? Because that was actually at a point, and the Norwich City commentators were saying this, that was their poorest spell in the entire game. Like, we felt like in cruise control, and we just let them back in. It wasn't like, where do you put the blame on that goal, Matt? Because it wasn't like one individual howler. It just felt a little bit soft.
Yeah, it was frustrating. I think what's maybe the most frustrating part is they spread the ball out. It looks like the guy's offside. I know there's been a lot of talk about that. It is what it is. They kind of bring the ball back away from goal after that. So it's not as if we can say they've, you know, gone from an offside position and straight away scored. They kind of bring it back. And then it's a really simple 1-2. I think that's where Ashley Barnes was involved, where they're able to get to the byline quite easily. And that's the part for me that was probably the most frustrating. Past that point, it's a relatively decent ball into the box. You know, I think, is it Bobby Thomas who gets a flick on to take it away from the immediate, I guess, 6-yard area? So you can't really argue that too much. And then there's a lot of fortune, I guess, from there. You know, they obviously get the shot in. It kind of bounces up quite nicely for Sargent, and he's able to get the shot, and he takes it relatively well as well. As you say, I've seen a couple of people kind of putting a bit of blame onto Collins. I think that's fairly ridiculous.
It's about 8 yards out, and like,
he's got defenders straight in front of him. I think it's pretty silly, even though he's got a hand to it. I think you can say he should be saving it. So,
but when you say you see people saying that, Dino's the ringleader, isn't he?
Oh, is it Dino?
Probably. He hates Collins.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
but
it's what people do, isn't it? They'll use these, I guess, half... I'm not saying Dino's necessarily done this, but he might have done. But it's those kind of half opportunities to go, see, you know, everything I've told you about this person was... was right. It's natural. I guess it's nature when it comes to footballers. But yeah, there's not really much Collins to do. But I think after the point of that 1-2, which is really quite, it just seems like we switched off a little bit. We all put our hands up for the offside, or the defence puts their hands up for the offside, but then they come back and it's almost like we've maybe switched off for that half second.
It's mad.
And they're able to get to the byline really easy.
I can confirm that he is a yard onside. I've seen tactical cam. Yeah, and he's so on. So it's just a terrible defensive line. And obviously then poor defending from that. But at that point, what are you thinking, Matt? You know, they've equalized, but it felt like, okay, we can, you know, there's still plenty of this half to go. You know, we've got half an hour plus stoppage time. And then 11 minutes later, and again, you know, in that 10 minutes, wasn't much happening. And then suddenly one ball's through, Kitchen dives in because he has to make a challenge. And then red card, that's his second of the season. He's clearly seen Hamer and gone, you know what? I'm going to break your record, mate.
Just step up into bookings. That role, yeah.
I mean, again, this is divided opinion. I've seen some people say, well, even on our Skybers Extra chat, you know, should he make the challenge? Should he not? Where do you stand on it, Matt?
He's got to make the challenge as far as I'm concerned. You know, what kind of response would we have if we lose that game 2-1 and he's just let somebody walk straight through in on goal to have what should be a relatively easy finish? You know, hindsight's a beautiful thing, and everybody in hindsight could say, well, we've ended up losing the game and now we've lost him for two games. But you can't let people walk through as a defender to have a relatively straightforward finish on goal. You know, he's got to go for the tackle. So that's simple as that. I don't know if you agree, but
no, I agree. I think in that moment, that from the moment we our midfield shape was just out in that moment and whatever happened, you know, because the thing is we just made the point to make out is Kitchen was sent off in the 71st minute. We had just made changes.
Yeah.
And everything in the midfield just seemed like completely off. I mean, he had just taken Torp off and brought Eccles on. And then there was just this enormous space for them to play that ball through. And look, in that speed at that moment, Kitchen obviously backs that he can get the ball. So it's one of those, I feel like he's unfortunate. I felt like his first red card against Sheffield Wednesday was never a red card. And this one, I feel like he's been put in a position where he's got to try and make a challenge. And, you know, another time, another day, he might, against another striker, he may well get a touch on the ball and it's fine. But remarkably, they obviously hit the top of the bar from that resulting free kick. But for the next 10 minutes or so, we were the better side with 10 men. Yeah. We suddenly probably had our best spell in the second half, other than the first 10 minutes of the first half when we scored. We suddenly had it again, and Casey Palmer came on like a man possessed. I mean, if he clearly he's on a step over bonus, he must get an extra 500 quid per step over, because the step over that guy does, it does make me smile. But what a lovely move. I mean, this is the other big chance on the stats where it says big chance missed. Wonderful intricate play. Palmer, O'Hare, Allen, lovely little back heel sort of flick to Palmer. And you just think, you're waiting for the net to bulge. I mean, huge, huge chance. And you just know if that was Norwich, that's in the back of the net all day long. Frustrating, wasn't it, that one?
Yeah, it was. But as you say, more than anything, at certain points, again, people are talking about it, saying, you know, he's got to score and all this kind of, you know, he's so instrumental in creating that opportunity with what he does in the middle of the pitch. You know, wins the ball, turn in and out a couple of times, shows strength to get away from his man or hold his man off, gets the ball into O'Hare. And it's a lovely bit of football, to be honest with you. And I think,
great play.
You know, again, could he potentially do better with the shot? Possibly. I don't think it's the worst shot in the world either. He's kind of digging it out a little bit. So it's just one of them. It's a good effort on goal.
Hits it fairly well, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's a strong strike. It's a relatively good save from the keeper. It's not a worldie or anything like that that people might say, but it's just one of those. It's a great bit of football, and unfortunately, it didn't go in the back of it.
No, you almost feel like with that, I almost feel like I don't think the keeper would have saved it at all if it had been like lower. I think I think he's only saved it because it's probably at the point it's got to the keeper being at, you know, in inverted commas, the perfect height.
Yeah.
And it's sort of almost like, you know, you've got your arms span out. I think if he hits that Palmer and that's sort of low across the grass, I think that's in the bottom corner and the keeper don't have a chance at saving it. almost, yeah, again, I think ever so slightly higher, ever so slightly lower. I think honestly, I think it's in the back of the net. But you look at it and you go, that's potentially a goal of the season. You know, if he scores that because of the intricate play bit, you know, before.
Yeah.
So we were looking a threat. Again, there was another opportunity. I think you remember this, Matt, when Alan broke and all he had to do was he had Palmer to his right, he had Wright to his left, and all he had to do was play this pass. Not Palmer, it was Van Aback, sorry. He had bombed up and literally ran all the way up. Alan, all you had to do was play this simple pass and he somehow passed it straight to the Norwich guy. And I felt for Van Aback because he literally sprinted the entire half. And it's those moments for me, which I'm like, I'm not saying we would have scored because Van Aback would still have to put a cross in, but it was a really good opportunity. And we never even got to see us have a chance from it because we somehow, the easy part, which is just the pass out wide to Van Aback, we mess up. And that sort of summed up Alan's performance for me. Like, you do some really good things, Jamie Alan, really good things where you go, and sometimes he shows a bit of pace, like driving forward with the ball. Like that move almost encapsulated Alan for me. Like, we'll bring it out and you think, great stuff. And then when it just matters, like the simple thing, he sort of messes up sometimes. And it's so frustrating because I feel like if he just ironed those things out, he wouldn't be getting some of the flack that I've been seeing from people. He almost does the hard things quite well at times, but the easy things are the things that he messes up, and that's what people remember.
Yeah.
I don't know what your thoughts on it are.
Yeah, I mean, Alan is an overall, it's one of them. I know everybody kind of, it almost feels like Alan is almost, I mean, maybe alongside Kelly, off the top of my head, he's kind of like the last remnants of a past time, which was an enjoyable and pleasant memory of a period where we got promoted from a lower division. But it's almost like it feels as though as a club we've moved on to a level, so almost people think, okay, well, we should be moving on from those players. And Alan is somebody who overall, yes, we probably as a club are moving to another level when it comes to overall ability. But where we are right at this moment in time, Alan is somebody who can still, in the right circumstances, come into a team and have a positive impact. But he probably isn't, he is now at a point where he's been bypassed in terms of overall kind of technical ability, I guess, against a lot of our players. So you are right, we are probably going to find those moments of frustration with him, but you also need those players who are maybe a bit versatile, and B, you're going to get the energy, as you say, you're going to get the work rate, and they're going to be important in certain situations. And we're still at a point where we're not completely past saying that isn't, I guess, a necessary part of our football squad, because, you know, we look at obviously what's happened with Ben Sheaf, and what we can't argue is that we've got enough bodies in terms of actual people who can play centre midfield. People can talk all day about, you know, ability and everything with those options, but we've certainly got enough people, and we're going to need to rely on those people to come in and do a job at different points. And this is why I think it's going to be a bit of trial and error over the next couple of games. So I almost, you know, now having the replay against Sheffield Wednesday, we want to look at positives, obviously the opportunity to go through from the tie-in and potentially have a bit of a route to, not to overlook Maidstone, but a route to an FA Cup quarter-final is an exciting one in itself. But there's opportunity for us to get legs in the minute of people who it might still be quite an important factor for us over the next few weeks.
Well, we need to keep everybody sharp, like you say, you know, and he's got to use the squad. Robbins has spoke for seasons when we've not had any depth about, you know, I need a squad, etc. So he's obviously using it, and it felt like you wanted to give Jamie Alan a game. Obviously, we'll just quickly talk over their winning goal, and we were made to pay for, obviously, and it's just typical. This goal is obviously a far harder chance than the two that we'd squandered, and he bends it top right corner, and that's it. And they didn't really feel, I don't know how you felt, Matt, but I wasn't sat there going, they're knocking on the door, you know, and we're going to concede imminently. I honestly felt like, we're going to win this still. Or at worst, settle for a point. And then the guy just bends it in, and that again, it's just those fine margins. You know, we have two glorious chances to get a second. This guy has like a, I won't say a half chance, but like it requires a very decent strike, you know.
Yeah.
And it's in. And
when you see a few of the angles of it as well, I mean, you know, you can see it's obviously a fantastic strike from the main angle of the game. But also when you watch a couple of the kind of replays and the reverse angles, and you watch the whip and the bend and the lack of visibility, I guess he's kind of looking through one of our defenders. I forget who it is, but it is actually just a fantastic goal, to be honest with you. Technically, it's a fantastic strike, and it's just one of those moments. You know, as frustrating as it is, it is just one of those moments, right? You know, there's not really much you can account for. And I agree with you in terms of the nature of the game. It didn't feel like they were knocking on the door, but it just feels like we are one of those sides where it doesn't matter when it happens. If we go down to 10 men,
everything almost from the moment they equalized, but then the red card, I was like, this is what I was talking about, the whole like Norwich away thing. Like, I was just like, this is it, we are going to lose. And even when we had that chance with Palmer, I was thinking, go on. And then we missed it. I was like, this is what's going to happen. We're going to end up losing this game by hook or by crook, because this is the narrative. This is the script when we play Norwich away, that we'll lose. Whereas I feel like we play someone else, you know, another day, you know, it might be different, but it did feel inevitable, even though inevitable rather than sort of predictable, you know, in terms of like that it was going to happen. But it was what it was. I don't know if you saw the footage, but literally, I mean, people, you know, slate us thinking that, you know, saying that we're treating games like cup finals. Well, let me tell you, Norwich, his whole squad in a line, arms in the air. It's like they'd won the league. I couldn't believe what I was watching.
And celebrating on the... I think this is why Robbins was saying about the fact of no handshakes after the game. But I think, you know, you watch Dagner go onto the pitch and he's going up to our players. And I don't think there was any kind of ill will or anything like that. It's just because he took so bloody long congratulating everybody on their bench after, you know, what appears to have been a massive win for them, that he doesn't get to Robbins before Robbins is probably gone. So I don't think it was, you know, any particular thing on his part of why he, you know, he's sending a message or anything like that. It's just they were taking ages celebrating, and then they go on the pitch, as you say, all lined up and to the crowd and everything else. That was, it was something to watch, wasn't it? Because you're thinking, this is big for them. This is a Premier League team a couple of years ago, and beating us at home was apparently a massive result.
It was. I've never understood that. I've seen other managers do it when their first port of call is to go to every single soul on their bench. I'm like, you're going to see them in a minute. Like, just go over. Show you. I mean, it was first, Robbins was obviously very, very frustrated. And obviously the other thing to come out from his press conference and his post-match comments was the confirmation that Ben Sheaf is going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. I mean, I'm not that surprised. I had a feeling, you know, as soon as saw him hold it, muscle injury, hamstring, that he was in trouble. But, you know, just a quick word on him, it is going to be a blow, mainly because of how well he's been playing. Like you said, we've got the bodies, numbers-wise, but he's obviously been playing, you know, in really great form. My only frustration with Ben Sheaf is he does seem to get two injuries a season. I mean, he doesn't really, can't seem to play more than like 30 games. And it's just a shame that, he had one at the start of this year, didn't he? And then again, and he'll probably come back in 6 to 8 weeks time, and then he'll probably be really good again to the end of the season, and hopefully he is. But it's a bitter blow for him personally, but also for us because of the form he was showing.
Yeah, absolutely. We're not going to direct replace Ben Sheaf. You know, he is the linchpin for our midfield. What we're going to have to do is obviously lean into the options that we have and lean into maybe some of the ways that we can turn it into an advantage. So, like we say, with talk going in, it's probably going to promote him to start games a little bit quicker than maybe was the plan. And he's shown, obviously, the abilities that he does have. There's certain things on a football pitch that Victor Torp will do better than Ben Sheaf. You know, there are also things that he won't do as well as Ben Sheaf. That's just the...
But that's why his partner is crucial, isn't it? Whether it's Latibodier, whether it's Eccles, whether it's Allen, they need to do, you know, Ben Sheaf's role. Because like you said, Torp clearly brings a more natural sort of attacking sort of flair than, say, Ben Sheaf naturally does. But we've got to partner him up, and that's probably going to be the key. But hopefully he can get back fit, because obviously it will be then a crucial point, won't it, in our season when he comes back.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, you obviously have a couple of results which maybe haven't gone the way people wanted or expected, and now with this injury, you combine it with maybe people thinking we were going to bring two or three players in the latter stage of the window. That hasn't happened. And all of a sudden, everybody was dead set. It was playoffs, and now everybody's dead set. It's not happening. For me, obviously, Ben Sheaf is a massive loss for us. You have to look at, let's say, the next 6 weeks from here, and there's some big games in there, but there's still some more than winnable games. It's not the worst stretch of games for us where you say we can't, you know, pick a number of potential victories in there even without Ben Sheaf. And you're kind of thinking, you know what, if you can keep yourself in and amongst that playoff area come 4, 5, 6 weeks time and he's potentially coming back, then it'll be really interesting. So but yeah, that I think this is the point that I was making, you know, who goes alongside potentially or hopefully Torp in centre midfield, who's able to offer that discipline, maybe the best alongside him. It's going to be that there's going to be a bit of trial and error with that, and hopefully we can find that combination where we can hopefully lean into the advantages that Torp gives us and maybe minimize the disadvantages of losing Ben Sheaf.
And that's it, and that's Mark Robbins, obviously his job to find that balance that can, you know, continue a new unbeaten run hopefully for us. Well, let's draw the Norwich game to a conclusion. I'll just take a man of the match from you, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, I will go for Torp. Really exciting player, potentially going to get more of an opportunity earlier than there might have been the plan. And I think there's a lot of excitement around that as well. So, you know, taking the positives from the game and from our current situation, I think he's the one that potentially stands out above the rest. So I'd lean to him.
You're listening to Sky Blues Extra.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The Sky Blues are back in action on Tuesday night, back for the third and in the trilogy of quickfire games against Sheffield.
Fourth, really.
Yeah, because like I say, Boxing Day, wasn't it? So yeah, They've all been very, very, very sort of, you know, compact. But in this, obviously, you know, three games in 4 weeks, whatever it was, a huge opportunity. You know, I think Mark Robbins' comments, even prior to Norwich, he clearly sees this as an opportunity. Clearly, Doug King and all of us, I think, in, you know, see this as a massive opportunity to get through, as you touched on, you know, earlier on, to potentially a quarter final of an FA Cup, because we've had the draw. We know we're going to be at home against the lowest ranked team left in the competition, you know, conference sort of south. So like, it's a humongous opportunity, and it's sort of I don't know which way fate's going to go. Either we're going to mess up the opportunity, or we'll end up messing up against Maidstone. one of the two things. But it is a massive game. I'm not sure Sheffield Wednesday probably. And I think when the draw happened in the game against Hillsborough, I think there was a collective thing of like, that is the last thing either team wanted. I mean, a friend of mine is a Sheffield Wednesday fan, and he genuinely messaged me saying, I want you to score a last minute winner. I don't want to draw. And obviously, the Jamie Allen hit it straight at the goalie, you know.
Yeah.
But big game, Matt. Big game.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is a massive opportunity, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think, again, you know, there might be situations which you don't plan for and might not be the most ideal, but you've got to look at where the opportunities come from. That I think with us at the minute, the opportunity in a game like this is we have enough strength in depth to be able to rest certain players without the standards dropping significantly. We can't wholesale drop our, you know, first 11 and completely bring another team in and not drop the standards. But I think you can rest 3-4 players, maybe even 4 or 5, and not let the standards drop too much. Plus, I think there are players in our team, as we touched on earlier on, who maybe need some more minutes in their legs moving forward into what will be an important, obviously, final half of the season. So You know, let's look at it as an opportunity. We know it's a massive opportunity in terms of where we can progress in the competition, but also maybe an opportunity for game time and confidence. You look at the likes of Sims, who we've all talked about a run of games. You know, he's obviously started at Norwich. This should, you would imagine, be another opportunity for him to start. Hadji Wright, as we've talked about, maybe needs to get a little bit more time on the pitch and move a bit further away from his rustiness. You know, as you quite rightly mentioned earlier on, looked quite rusty against Bristol City and markedly better against Norwich. And hopefully that will continue the more game time opportunity that he has. Torp again, I think there's an opportunity with him. And then there's probably, you know, three or four who really jump out at me as maybe needing a rest. And there's an opportunity to do that without massively letting their standard drop. So maybe Sakamoto might need a little bit of a rest. Maybe Milan as well. There might be an opportunity to give him a little bit of a rest because obviously he does a lot on that right-hand side. But yeah, there's certainly enough in this game to say, whilst it might have been more ideal to have gone straight through and you know, not had another game to worry about, I think there's plenty of ways that we can turn it into a positive, aside from obviously the massive opportunity in terms of progression in the cup.
Exactly that. And obviously, you know, we've played Sheffield Wednesday so many times, it feels like we've all become very accustomed to them, and we know their threats, and we know they're danger players. And, you know, it's, they're a side who, you know, I mean, they got thumped on the weekend against Huddersfield in a huge, huge sort of relegation 6-pointer, really. It's suddenly, after their little mini revival, looking at rather bleak for them in the Championship. Yeah. And obviously, you know, they've got this midweek trip, you know, down from Sheffield to Coventry. And then they've got a weekend fixture following that, you know, and you sort of look at it, and obviously they're going to see it as an opportunity because they'll know that they would have Maidstone in the next round.
Yeah.
What are you expecting from them? I mean, is it going to be pretty much more of the same, you know, from the games at Hillsborough? Obviously this one, we're at home again. What are you expecting from them? Maybe team-wise, you know, do you expect them to play similar youth players? Because they played that very young goalkeeper, didn't they, in the sort of first leg of this fourth round tie. Do you expect that?
I mean, I'm not too sure on the situation with the keeper. I know that was based on some injuries. So
right.
I would expect they'll play a relatively strong side. I think they'll see it as an opportunity. I think their manager would be quite keen for a feel-good factor after a really quite poor, as you say, quite horrific. I think they conceded four goals in like 4 minutes or something crazy.
Second half,
So, and that was obviously a massive game for them, as you say, against Huddersfield. So I think their manager will be quite keen for a bit of a good news story. And if they can obviously win this game and then go on to, you would imagine, play and beat Maidstone and get to an FA Cup quarterfinal, there's a few things he can hang his hat on there. You know, he came in with them in quite a desperate situation. If he was to see them end up, you know, relegated, I don't know that anybody could massively blame him, but could say, well, you know, maybe we made a bit of progress. We got to a cup quarterfinal. It's not a horrific situation. I would imagine they'll play a relatively strong side. They've got a few interesting situations with some of their, I guess, better performers this season. Windass, I think, has been injured. Didn't play at the weekend. Marvin Johnson didn't play at the weekend. So
seems to have been interesting Windass, with them. When he plays, he seems to score goals for them. He does seem like a good player. I mean, the interesting thing, which I've just seen, is that Sheffield Wednesday play on Friday this week.
Right, okay, yeah.
Obviously, we don't play until the Sunday. So the Sunday, they're playing Friday night at home to Birmingham, which is, again, a massive home game for them. And you suddenly look at it and go, well, you know, suddenly from Tuesday to Friday, that's quite a tight turnaround following the game that we've just had. I agree. I think they will go fairly, fairly strong, but they're going to have one eye on that game because they are fighting for their lives. It's a different sort of pressure to what we've got. You know, in the worst case scenario, we just don't finish in the playoffs, do we? You know, it's sort of...
Yeah. It's a bit more do and die for them. I think when you've got the niggling injuries, like I say, I know Windass and Johnson didn't play.
Would you risk them? I guess that's the thing. When you've got the game on Friday.
Yeah. I think if everything being equal, they had the opportunity, you know, with players who aren't maybe touch and go, then they'd probably go a bit stronger. But it might be a case of if Windass, you know, is in a situation where you could claim, but you're then risking his ability to to turn around ready to go with 3 or 4 days later, then that might be a reason to say no. I know Bannon as well. I think he was he came off against Watford and then he was able to play at the weekend, but that might be another one again where they say, well, do we want to prioritise obviously the league and Birmingham versus if we play him at Coventry, we might be risking him. So whilst I would imagine they would want to go relatively strong, it might be that there's a few hard decisions for them to make on that front, especially with A, the injuries, and B, the fact, as you say, they're playing a couple of days
before. Got to manage their squad. I mean, looking at us then, the team, you sort of briefly touched on it. Who would you expect? I mean, you'd imagine, I guess, Ben Wilson will come back in between the sticks. Louis Binks, obviously, he would have played anyway. So in a way, Kitchen only is going to miss one game because Kitchen wasn't going to play in this game anyway because Binks has, you know, been playing. I agree with you. I feel like, obviously, I think Bobby Thomas will keep his place. I think it'll be Binks and Thomas. I'd imagine De Silva will probably come in at left back. I don't think Bidwell had his greatest game against Norwich. Didn't really talk about that. I thought he gave the ball away quite a bit. And then right back, I think you could be onto something, Matt. I think you might rest Van Aebak, and I could see Latabodier playing right back. I don't know what you think to that.
Yeah, no, it's exact same back five for me.
And then think midfield, I think he probably is going to go Tor. I think he will start him. And then maybe he'll bring Eccles back in. You know, he's sort of, you know, hopefully he'll be a bit fresher. And then the interesting thing would be, I think he will play. It's difficult because Palmer's going to start the way he came on against Norwich and looked very, very good. It's whether does he start? I mean, the thing I'm interested by is, and I'll get your thoughts on it, the attack really, because like you said, Sakamoto could be rested. I sort of feel like you obviously got O'Hare. Could Wright play down the middle? Could he bring Godden back in? Does Sims get another start? Where are you at in terms of that front four then? The Cam and then the left and right and the striker. What's your sort of gut say about what Mark Robbins would do?
I think you've got to give Sims another go, right? Yeah. You know, I think obviously the fact that he's started him against Norwich would signify he maybe agrees with the fans who have been quite vocal in saying he needed more of an opportunity. And I think just kind of one away game at Norwich isn't enough. You know, you need to give him a run of games, and an FA Cup game, which is more an opportunity than maybe do or die, is another opportunity to do that against a defence that aren't particularly great. There's possibly, hopefully, an opportunity for him to build his confidence with another goal. So I would expect him to, I would be really surprised if he came out. I would expect Wright to play because I think he needs to get more minutes back in his legs and kind of move away from the rustiness. I kind of feel like the bigger question for me might be what happens at the Cam position, but I think he's ultimately going to go with O'Hare, and I think it might be Sakamoto who comes out for Palmer, because as you say, Palmer looked lively when he came on. I think, and more than anything, the opportunity to give Sakamoto a bit of a rest. Obviously, his feedback after the game was, you know, he'd taken a few bumps and bruises, and he might want to protect him a little bit. Obviously, he's playing a lot of minutes, so that's where I would see the front four. But again, we never really know with Robbins. You wouldn't be surprised if it was.
He's nice little Kerbal, you know. He does like a little Kerbal. Maybe it'll be interesting to see. It's because obviously there is the prospect of extra time and penalties. Is there extra time? There is extra time.
I believe so.
So extra time and penalties. So hopefully it doesn't go all the way to that. I'm not sure I can watch another penalty shootout after Wembley, to be honest. So, but no, we should have enough if we, you know, perform to the levels to get through, really, shouldn't we?
You'd imagine so.
Yeah, and hopefully a decent crowd as well. I think after the draw, I think as long as it wasn't like another championship team, I think if it'd been a big, big team or who we got, Maidstone, I think people see it as an opportunity. Either it was going to be an opportunity to play Liverpool and Man City or play Maidstone and then get through that. I mean, you can't ask for a better opportunity, but we'll cross that bridge, hopefully, when we get to it and we're not sort of ruining a missed opportunity. But I will round up this section, Matt, getting your prediction for the game.
Yeah, I just think we're, even with the potential of making what would be 6+ changes, I just think we're a better team than them, even if they go with their strongest team. So I think it will be an enjoyable evening for us. I'm going to go for a 3-1 win. I think he'll be relatively comfortable. I might come to buy my words with this one, but I just think they're not a very good team, to be honest with you. And I just think even with changes, we're comfortably better. And I'd like it to be an opportunity for some players as well who aren't starting regularly, but or probably still a level where you can say they're better than Sheffield Wednesday, not to be disrespectful, to maybe look at it as an opportunity to kind of further their claims to get more game time. So, yeah, I'm hoping for it to be an opportunity as well to put, I guess, the frustration of the defeat on Saturday behind us and obviously build that excitement, right? It's in itself beating Sheffield Wednesday, maybe we would expect to do it, but then it's going to be, right, here we go. Fifth round of the
get
cup,
us back on track as well. Maidstone. Get us back on track.
It will help build the. It's almost as if the excitement of the FA Cup is on pause because you've got to go through this game. But if we get through this game, and then you're thinking you can really allow yourself to go right. Maidstone, look, we saw what they did against Ipswich. Fair enough, but I'm pretty confident we would win that game. I might pay for those words.
That's why I'm concerned. Only more worried about Tuesday because that. Look, that Ipswich Maidstone game is literally you play that 100 times, 99 times Ipswich win that, and the one time it doesn't is what happened. I don't think lightning strike twice in that way, and I just think at home with a huge crowd as we'd have, we'd get through. But we need to beat Sheffield Wednesday. You're going for a 3-1 win, and I hope, Matt, that you are right. That's all we've got time for this episode. Thank you, as always, Sky Blue Army, for your support. Make sure you follow us at Sky Blues Extra and make sure you head on down pre-match on Tuesday to Dylan's Brewery. As always, we'll be open. Lots of drink offers. Dal's Diner as well to get some nice grub before the FA Cup fourth round replay. And that's all we've got time for. And hopefully a 3-1 win, as Matt predicts. Play up Sky Blues.
Thanks for listening to the Sky Blues Extra podcast.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport, powered by fans.